Guys get tired. I think they need opportunities. Hopefully Tibbs sees that they can really help.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. We're going to look at Monday's five games, recap all the action that went down there, including the return of Markel Fultz. We're going to preview a full eight-game Tuesday in the NBA, and we're going to shine that player spotlight on Domantas Sabonis of the Indiana Pacers. We are also going to shout out the winners of the various Red Rock head-to-head leagues and dynasty leagues. The rotisserie leagues are still going, but we're going to shout out the winners of those head-to-head leagues who then find themselves in the Champions League next season to face off against myself and Matt Smith. So lots in today's podcast.
Let's get to it,
I saw the thing for the starters come up today saying that Michael Bolton was part of their rundown. I hope that he was on their podcast. I haven't listened to it yet or on the show, but pretty exciting if Michael Bolton was on there. And if he drops a Let's Get To It, I'll pretty much fall over and die. But let me know if that actually happened before I listen to the starter show to see good old Bolts over on there. What we will do is start off by announcing the winners of the Red Rock leagues. We'll start with the five Red Rock Dynasty leagues that have finished. There's the original Red Rock Dynasty League, a 16-team league, 400 player deep with contracts, salaries, not real salaries that we had to bid for in an auction player salaries increase by 20% each season and the salary cap increases by only 5%. So lots of tough decisions there. The winner of that was Kevin Lappin. So shout out to you, Kevin, for taking home the Red Rock Dynasty League. Then you've got the four Red Rock 30 leagues. Two of them are just 30-team straight dynasties and two of them are real salary dynasties. Trent Copeland went back-to-back in the Red Rock 30 Steph Curry division. So shout out to you, Trent. Adam won the Bernard King division. Cap Explosions won the Judd Buechler Real Salary Cap League. I'm not sure who Cap Explosions is, but shout out to you because you beat me in the final there. And David Hopkins won the Reggie Evans League. That's another one of the real salary leagues. His team was Justice League. So thank you for you, for all you, everyone who participated in those leagues. Will be once Fantrax finalizes all the standings, which is 1st of April, I believe, the payouts will come to all you guys, and then we'll start going about lottery drawings and all that sort of stuff, head ourselves into the off season in all those leagues. For the head-to-head leagues, which are all 12-team leagues, with the exception of the Champions League, which was a 14-team league, they were all nine categories, but we replaced field goal percentage with two-point percentage and three-point percentage and eliminated turnovers. I'd like to know what everyone's feedback was on that, everyone who participated in these leagues, what you thought of that change in ninth category. We may go something different next season and do the old rebound split into offensive and defensive rebounds for a nine-cat league. We'll see how it goes, but I'll just get some feedback from you guys, what you thought of the two percentage categories in that league. The winner of the Champions League, who gets a return invitation to the Champions League next year, the team name is OITNB, so shout out to you for getting that one. I think that was, sorry if I'm incorrect, that was Joe Chung that got that one. And then we'll go through the individual leagues. The Bam Adebayo League was PGarrett08. The Frank Ntilikina League's name was Ruiner. The Harry Giles League was Hey Now, You're a Wall Star. The Jarrett Allen League, Kyrie on My Haywood Son. The John Isaac League was Rudy Lalanne. The Josh Jackson League was Matt Chilson. The Justin Patton League was Point God. The Lonzo Ball League was Elson17. I think that's Jason Elson. The Luke Kennard League was Jeopardy, and that is, I'm pretty sure, Jeff Padre. The TJ Leaf League was Go David West, Young Man. The Tyler Lydon Division was The Battersai. And the Zach Collins League was won by the Charles Oakleys. All of you guys will join OITNB, myself and Matt Smith, in the Champions League next season. So congratulations to you guys. The rotisserie stuff is still going on, and we'll announce the winners of those when that comes to fruition. let's go into the monstrous line of the night. The monstrous line of the night is also the waiver wire line of the night because Trey Burke was out of control. 42 points for Burke with 3 triples, 1 rebound and 12 assists with a steal. He took a whopping 31 shots and hit 19 of them and was 1 of 1 from the free throw line. Burke has been really a revelation over the last couple of weeks. He's the 61st ranked player over the last 2 weeks, 25th over the last week. Over the season, in 19 minutes, he's averaging 12, 2 rebounds and 4 assists, which isn't overly impressive, but his field goal percentage has been ludicrous. And that is really bumping up his value. It's by far his number one category for the season, and even over the last 2 weeks, it's over double the value of the other categories in there. And that's because in those last 8 games, he's shooting 57% from the field on almost 14 attempts per game. Now, only shooting 64% from the line. So absolutely ridiculous to think that he's shooting that well from the field and only doing it with 42% shooting from 3, which we're going to get into in a second. But his numbers have been crazy. He started the last 2 games and you have to think there's absolutely zero chance that he'll be giving up this starting point guard job to Emmanuel Mudiay. He played 41 minutes in this overtime game because Mudiay was out. I don't think he's going to play quite that much in the next game, but he is a must-own guy. But what I do want to talk about is just how crazy the shooting from Trey Burke has been. If I can find my sheet that I've got here. Yeah, so in terms of what he is doing, he is in the 94th percentile of all combo guards in his two-point percentage. It is almost 10% higher than last year, shooting 55% on his twos, and he was at 45.9 last season. That is obviously a crazy, crazy high. 38% from three, totally fine. Yeah, really good shooting there. Just amazing to me that he is shooting that well from two, and probably the more amazing stat is, if we look at this, is from Cleaning the Glass, on long mid-range twos, which they define as all shots outside of 14 feet, the free throw line distance inside the three-point arc, he is in the 100th percentile in amount of shots taken from long two range. He's taking 42% of his shots there, which is a ludicrous amount, and he's hitting 54% of them. Again, insanity. The best seasons he's ever had from that region have been 45%, which had been the last 2 years in Washington and in Utah. So hitting these shots at a 100% unsustainable rate. The other weird thing that's happened with his game is he's moved from, when he was in Utah, he was in the 73rd percentile in terms of shots taken from three, 38% of his shots from three. This year, he's 16th percentile and taking only 23% percent. That's very fancy there. From three, he is taking only 23% of his shots from three, which when he's shooting so well, seems a little weird. Now, I was getting into, I had a discussion with someone about Trey Burke. I said, oh, he's our point guard of the future. And that could very well be the case. I 100% disagree with it. He is 25 years of age and he has sucked through the majority of his career. And I don't think this sort of, 2-point long two shooting is going to sustain. But he made an interesting point saying if they get a real coach, and let's be honest, Jeff Hornacek is a shithouse coach, he will make him convert these long twos into threes. And if he goes from taking 23% of his shots back to 40% of his shots from threes and still hits them at 40%, then he can retain some value. But I feel that there's absolutely zero chance that he can be the most prolific shooter from long two range and hit them at a range that's 96th percentile. It seems absolutely extraordinary that you can be that accurate plus take the most shots for your position there. It just doesn't seem like something that's going to be able to continue. And I feel pretty confident that it won't, but hey, we will see. You got to take that chance. You got to add him at this point and see how it all pans out. But shout out to him for getting, from all reports, he changed a lot of things in his life to get to this position. And you can't be happier for someone than when they do something like that. They recognize their faults and they go through and change it. So massive, massive shout out to Trey Burke. And he, I know I talked about him for a while, but I think it's important because this is really huge what he's doing. He is your monstrous and your waiver wire line of the night. The young gun of the night goes to Wayne Selden Jr. of the Memphis Grizzlies. Seldo dropped in 23 points with a rebound and 4 assists. He had 4 triples, 3 steals, and his shooting was awesome as well. 9 of 14 from the field for Seldo. He is a top 100 player over the last 2 weeks. And very similarly to Burke, he's doing it on the back of some really high shooting. His best category in that time frame is his field goal percentage, but only marginally above his 3. So that does give him some hope. 53% over the last 7 games from the field, 2.4 triples and 15 points per game. But He is shooting 43% from the field for the season. He shot 43% in his 14 games last season. So to expect him to maintain a level of low 50s, maybe even mid 40s might be pushing it just a little bit for Wayne Seldon. He's not doing a huge amount else, and he's not like he's doing it in huge minutes, only 22 minutes per game. It is a top 100 situation, but he is doing it on the back of field goal percentage, that when that dips, you lose points, you lose threes, you lose field goal percentage. Three categories dip just because the shots don't go in, and then you could very easily and probably, most likely we'll see him fall outside that top 100 pretty precipitously. But he's always worth a streamer. He's an interesting DFS GPP guy. Probably not one of the greatest ones out there, but he can be interesting. So he's someone we need to pay attention to on this Memphis team that, honestly, it was absolutely amazing today, and didn't think I'd be saying that about them too often. The dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. I hope you've dropped this guy's ass. Lord Alfred Payton was shitful. 0 points, one rebound, three assists, and a steal. Clearly outplayed by Tyler Ulis today. Over the last month, he is outside the top 200, Lord Alfred. Still inside the top 80 on the season, and he looked really good when he came across to Phoenix. I know he got a dud of the night not too long ago, so I'm not going to harp too much on this, but it's really hard to hold him. But I could go back one game in his game against the Magic, and many of you will go, Josh, revenge game, where he had 14, 5, and 8 with 3 steals and a block. But the more important thing is that he played 34 minutes. But in this case, you know what? Maybe I seed something to you with revenge games, because Jay Triano has had this thought process in his mind all year. This is why I think he's a shit coach, because this is just, it's baffling coaching where you just bench this guy through all of the last month and you play your former team again. You know what, mate? I want you to be so petty that you only play well against those guys, so you're going to get to do whatever you want. That is the players controlling everything. That is absolutely bullshit coaching. And that's, Dave Yeager has done similar things this year. Shockingly, it's always on the shit teams that seems to happen. But, we can talk revenge. It's more the fact that he played an extra 20 minutes in that game against Orlando versus what he did today against Boston. But no other matchups against Orlando coming up. So I don't expect Alfred to be putting up numbers that justifying him to be owned in 10, 12, or probably even 14 team leagues with the way things are currently going with him. Just a real, real stink fest of a time for him in Phoenix. Let's go into these games now that we had on Monday. Talk about those. There are 5 of them to get through. The first one was an overtime game. I referenced that already. The New York Knicks and the Charlotte Hornets. Mick Beasley played 35 minutes and had 27 and 8. Good percentages from him. The minutes are up. The production's up. You add him while it's happening like this. Well, Timmy Hardaway had 17, 5 and 2. Now, there was no Manny Moutier. There was no Kylo Quinn. So, of course, Frank Ntilikina, who started the last game, he got shuffled to the bench and played only 18 minutes. Now, he did foul out in that time, which is obviously an issue, and they wanted to play him as the backup point guard. But I have a couple of issues with this. We've seen so many times in Portland, CJ McCollum, he plays as a backup point guard, especially last season, but he's also able to start and do this. Devin Booker was the backup point guard in Phoenix for plenty of times. He was able to start, and then he became the backup point guard. So you didn't need to take Ntilikina out of the starting lineup when you think he's going to be a shooting guard, so he can also be the backup point guard. But if you think now that he's, we need to take him away from the position we're supposed to be developing him in, then is he now a point guard? And if so, play him as a point guard. Simple as that. So there's two confusing parts going to this. I understand why it was done in theory because Moutier was out, but he's either a point guard or he's not a point guard. And if he's a point guard, you give him those point guard minutes every game, not when someone's out. And if he's not, I don't care. You start him and then you switch those positions around. It is pretty straightforward to do. Plenty of teams are able to do it. Enes Kanter was a monster again, 15 and 13 in 33 minutes. He's getting extra run with Kylo Quinn out and still needs to be held. While it's really tough to hold onto Quinn, obviously, dealing with his injury. Of course, the man who replaced Frankie Ntilikina in the starting lineup was Lance Thomas, just someone who, if that lineup remains when Moutier is not sick, then Hornacek should just pack the bags immediately. On to the Hornets. Kemba was great, 31 and 7. Dwight had 23 and 13 in a really strong matchup for him, while Marvin Williams actually got to 30 minutes and blocked 2 shots. He has been an abject disappointment this season. Really not that surprising, but clearly not a 12-team guy. Bill Hernangómez, 17 minutes, 12 and 5, a steal and a block. Really nice numbers for Bill. probably a 16-team league guy at this point, but Dwight Howard, one technical away from another suspension, so keep an eye on when that goes down, and then you go and add Bill. In that case, Nick Batum returned. He was on a minutes restriction, 9-3-4 in 24 minutes for Nicky. So that meant Jez Lamb's role got reduced a bit. Lamb was still good, 12-6-6 in 28 minutes, but you'd expect those 24 from Batum and 28 for Lamb to switch in the next game, and then Nick to push back up to 30, 32 minutes per game, rendering Lamb not really a 12-team league player. Kid Gilchrist also just absolutely putrid this season from a fantasy point of view. The Lakers and the Pistons, just nonsense again in terms of minutes for these Lakers. 43 minutes for Lonzo, but he hit his shots, man. 7 of 8 from the field, and this is why I am so excited about him as a fantasy guy. Not that I think he's hitting 88% of his shots, because of course he's not, but 15, 8, and 11 with 2 steals, just give below average shooting, and the numbers are going to be awesome. Julius Randle was great. Brookie Lopez had 14-3, and yes, he had 9 assists as well as 5 blocks. His late season resurgence has been awesome, while the future MVP had 20-11, Kyle Kuzma, in 41 minutes. But they are just bonkers minutes there. And you can tell me, oh, this team's shorthanded all you want, but Thomas Bryant played 38 seconds. Gaz Payton II, the Mitten, played 3 minutes. Ivica Zubats played 9 minutes. Tyler Ennis played 18 minutes. Travis Ware played 17 minutes. That you can very, very comfortably take 6 minutes away from Lonzo and give them from to Ennis. You can take 7 minutes away from Kuzma and give them to Ware. You don't even have to give them to Ware. You can give them to Bryant and play him more at power forward also, and run some weird lineups, but there's no need to be putting this stress on two blokes, Ball and Kuzma, who have just come back from lower extremity injuries. Anyway, very little to see there in terms of fantasy pickups or anything like that. On to the Pistons. I tweeted this out today, but I have to mention it here because it honestly surprised me. There are 3 players in the NBA whose first name is Reggie, and all of them play for the Pistons. Reggie Bullock, Reggie Jackson, and Reggie Hearn is the third in that trifecta. Bullock, he's not going to win it because Victor Oladipo is going to win it, but he's got to be at least a player where you go, you know what? Reggie Bullock is very improved, and he should be on my ballot if it's 5 or 10 deep. However, maybe not 5 deep, but he has been excellent, continues to shoot at a ridiculously high efficiency. He's not the best fantasy guy, but if you want points and threes without hurting your field goal percentage, he's going to do it. Drummond had 15 and 18, while Reggie Jackson, this is the best that he's looked, 20 points, yes, 22 shots, but I'm more interested in the fact that he played 28 minutes. And now is when you grab him. When he was getting 20 and 15 in a knockout playoff situation, you couldn't deal with that sort of shit. When he gets 28 minutes, it's all systems go. Bit disappointed that my boy Luki Kennard only played the 19 minutes, 7-2-2, while Stan Johnson played 30 in this one. I still do believe that Kennard is going to have a run of 12-team value here down the stretch if your league is playing, but it wasn't to be in this one. The Denver Nuggets and the Philadelphia 76ers, the Blue Arrow had 17, and he had a Richie Beno.
2 for 2, 2, 2.
Really good stuff there from Jamal Murray, while Fartin Will Barton got hot early, 25 with 5 triples and 3 assists. Didn't do a massive amount else, but that's nice from Barton. Of course, they're clear must-owns. While Babyneck Wilson Chandler went 8-8-7 with 2 steals. Big minutes for him again, 35 minutes there, but very little. I think he's more of a 14-team league player. Paul Millsap, I don't think, his free throws were an abomination in this one. 6 of 11, really big negative impact there. I will categorically say he is never becoming a top 20 player again. And I don't think we should even be expecting him to be a top 50 player from here on out this season, definitely, but even next season as well. Well, Nick Jokic couldn't get the shots to fall, still had the triple one, 14-7-4, got into some foul trouble. But let's talk of probably the biggest story of the night, apart from Trey Burke turning into Michael Jordan. And that is the surprise return of Markelle Fultz. Nobody saw this coming. I just did a podcast on Locked On NBA speaking to Keith Pompey, talking about, is this guy ever going to play? The clock's ticking. I think, we said if it's like another 4 or 5 games where he just won't play the rest of the season. He came out, he played. He played 14 minutes as the backup point guard. And if we're going to be honest, he looked excellent, especially for a guy that hasn't played in 5 months. He had 10 points. He had 8 assists. He had 4 rebounds. Yeah, he went 5 of 13 from the field and was second in the team in shot attempts with a massive usage of 40. Some of those coming late, but you could see him out there, and the crowd was absolutely 100% pumped. They were so excited to see him out there, but you could see him do things and you went, oh, shit. Yeah, look, shit, now I know. Like, now I see Now I know why Philadelphia traded that future first to get him, because he was doing shit like he was crossing blokes over. He gets to the rim, not whenever he wants, but you could see that in his game. He's big. He blocks shots. He didn't do it in this game, but he can do that. He was passing guys, and he looked like he fit in, yeah, pretty much immediately, which is going to be excellent for him. I was pretty adamant heading into the season that in terms of dynasty value, I had him number one because I just wasn't sure about Lonzo. I thought Lonzo could have good fantasy value, but I thought his bust potential was higher. Yeah, it's obviously, I look dumb saying that now because of the way Don Mitchell's played and Jayce Tatum's played, but what we saw from Fultz today should give you a pretty large fantasy boner. But I don't think he's really becoming a 12-team league guy this year. Will he get to 25 a night? I don't think so. I think he'll play as that backup behind Simmons the most of the year. Over the next week, you'll start to see him play 2 to 3, 4 minutes next to Simmons. We already see TJ McConnell move down to 13 minutes. We saw Justin Anderson eliminated from the rotation as McConnell moved over to the 2-guard spot, pushing Bellinelli and Redick to the 3. But it was a great hit out, and it's just awesome for this guy to see the court and to get out there and for us all to go, yeah, I can see why. I can see why he was so highly rated. It's going to remain one of the more interesting, weird, batshit crazy situations we have seen in the NBA. Just a bloke being out for, I've got no idea, some random mystery injury, which there has to be something nefarious behind it in terms of how it was obtained. But he's back. He looked good. And let's hope he builds on this now. And the Sixers, man, they got a chance to win their next 5 as well. They've already won their last 6 or 7. They could be really, really cracking into that third seed. So it's going to be interesting to see how they go. The other Sixers guys, Embiid was good. Bob Cove was great, 18-6 with 4 triples, a steal, and a block, while Benny Simmons, only the 7 points, but had a double-double, the Rick Rubio special, 13 rebounds and 11 assists as he continues to rack up those numbers. And Ilyasova, man, you get 3 blocks out of him. I think you should be feeling pretty bloody lucky when that happens. The next game, just absolute disgraceful performance from the Minnesota Timberwolves. The Grizzlies had them covered. Marc Gasol was excellent, 20-10, 4 triples, 6 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks. We don't know what we're going to get from this Memphis team. Will they sit him out with some bullshit illness? I thought that could happen in this game. They were up and heading into the fourth quarter, and Gasol was on the bench for an extended time, and I was just ready to go, they're not going to bring him back in. But they brought him back in, and he won them the game in the end. Look, really just excellent performance from him. Seldon, we've already talked about. There was no Tyreek Evans, who's away for personal reasons. I think you can move on from him. While Jermichael Green did his thing, he's a good rebound streamer. I wouldn't be looking at him as too much more than that. While we had Andy Harrison had 11-1-4 with a triple one, which that will get impacted a bit with Tyreek, if Tyreek returns. But I think we have to operate under the assumption that we're probably not going to see Tyreek for the majority of the rest of these games. That's just my feeling. It's not based on anything. And that gives Harrison some value. Dylan Brooks got into some early foul trouble, only played 19 minutes, but he's really talking deep league stuff there. Now, what I want to talk about here is Minnesota, and if you don't like me talking about coaches, switch it off. Fast forward. The quote at the start of the show was from Jeff Teague. We have heard Jeff Teague now talk about Tibbs in the nicest possible way, being a cock muncher in terms of being able to run these rotations. We've heard Taj Gibson say the same thing. We've seen Jimmy Butler say the same thing. How is literally every person, his own team, his fans, media, saying something, and this stubborn old bastard won't listen? You lost to the Grizzlies, but you played Jeff Teague 42 minutes. You played Taj Gibson 43 minutes. You played Andrew Wiggins 43 minutes. Towns played 39. Probably would have played more, but he had 4 fouls. And then you give those backup minutes, the rest of the minutes, 30 to Jamal Crawford. Bielitsa played 22. Tyus Jones played 6 minutes. That is disgraceful coaching. And people can say, oh, they got injuries. Jimmy Butler's out. Yes. Put Justin Patton in there for 1 second of action. Put Marcus Georges Hunt in there. Put Jefferson in there. I know Cole Aldrich was sick. You could have used Shabazz Muhammad when you had him. And this is what people say, man, Jordan used to play 40 minutes a night. Iverson played 40 minutes a night. They didn't get hurt. Like, people will say that to me. It's not just about them getting hurt. Sure, Jimmy Butler seems to get hurt at this time every single year, and he's been coached by Tom Thibodeau the majority of his career. Derrick Rose is finished. Lowell Deng's finished. Joakim Noah's finished. Carlos Boos is out of the league. Yeah, we've got a fair degree of evidence here. But it's not that. It's the way that this guy grinds down on this team, like yelling at them every single second of the game. I wish I had something I could, you know, I don't want to blow the microphone up with me screaming like him. But for once, you're sure these players, and again, kids listening, cover your ears, the players are just going, Tibbs, can you shut the fuck up? Because I know I'm saying that, because he is just constantly in their ears, grinding them into dust, as we've highlighted plenty of times, when they're up 20 points with 2 minutes left and Towns is in there working on his 41st minute. And not only that, is you destroy the chemistry in the either it's 15 guys on this roster, but half of you guys, you're just here to give us reach arounds when we come in the locker room. Like, you're not here to play basketball. And they'd be like, man, give me an opportunity. And the other players would go, yeah, man, give Marcus a go. Give Tyus a go. Get Justin out there, man. He can play. Get him out there. It is absolute nonsense. And I'm not blaming this loss entirely on Tibbs, but this is bullshit. And it needs to stop. And I don't know when it will. But his front office management stuff is not ideal. His man management stuff is not ideal. His rotations are not ideal. He's a defensive guru and the defense is shit. He really is a bad coach and there are so many issues with it. Now, for fantasy, it's brilliant. 25-2-7 fatigue. That's great. Taj had 18-8 with 2 steals and 3 blocks. Yes. Townsy had 15-12-6 with 3 blocks. Electric. Wigo had 18-7 with 2 steals. Woo, let's go. But when you own Jimmy Butler and he breaks down, these are the sort of things that you do have to worry about. Now, on a actual fantasy point of view here, Nemanja Bjelica, only 22 minutes. It seems like he's lost Tibbs' trust completely. The minutes are well down from him. He was scoreless on 5 shots, had 4 rebounds. You can't sort of carry that sort of bullshit at this point in the season. He is a strong cut. There are people who listen to this who will defend Tibbs. I've got no doubt about that. Feel free to tweet at me and tell me why I'm wrong. I'm not, but feel free to tweet at me why I'm wrong or what you, an alternate theory. I'm always happy to listen and debate things on that, but it is just, it's one of the more, like, Jeff Hornacek's situation's infuriating. Yeah, some of the things that Jason Kidd were doing were mind-bogglingly stupid, but this is ridiculous. For a team that's as good as this is absolute negligence. It's bad. And it needs to stop. And it won't unless somebody from ownership, Glenn Taylor, steps in. The last game of the night, the Boston Celtics and the Phoenix Suns. Al Horford strong again. This is why you don't drop him. 19-9-7, 3 triples, a steal and a block. While Jayce Tatum was back in business. 23-6, 2 triples and 2 steals. Marcus Morris returned from an ankle sprain. Sprained his other ankle. Now, he said it's not too serious. X-rays were negative, but he is going to miss some time. The Celtics, thankfully, play Wednesday, and they're not on again until the weekend, so he might only miss one game. But with Tatum playing, obviously, and Jaylen Brown back, Morris's value is going to dip just a little bit. So, you might need to drop him now and get someone else in for these games. Greg Monroe.
As Greg runs in, we realize this could get dangerous. Yeah.
Just chalk this one up in the anti-revenge game. 8-4-3 for Munro in 19 minutes. He'd been putting up some pretty strong numbers. He really is just a borderline guy at the moment. While Terry Rozier, he reverted back to his shooting from last season, only 4 of 16 for 16 points, but 4 triples, 7 rebounds, 3 assists, filling up the box score as we've seen him do so much this year. On to the Suns. Alfred Payton, absolutely shithouse as we talked about, but Tyler Uller stepped up. Now, he's been a huge disappointment this season. I'd say him and Thon McCur, almost the two biggest disappointing second-year players who really kicked on at the end of last year. He had 19-5-8 with a steal and a block, shot the ball well, and the next time the Suns play, you might look to stream him in, especially if Booker is out. Same with Troy Daniels, who had 18 points, all of them from 3 in his 36 minutes, while Marquese Chris was solid, 13-4 in 24 minutes and didn't commit a foul. So that's the worrying sign, is he didn't commit a foul and still only played 24 minutes in a game with Warren and Booker out. He is not a 12-teamer, nor is Alex Len, because now Big Source Alan Williams is back. Williams played more minutes than Len in his first game back. They both got into significant foul trouble, 7 fouls between them in their less than 31 combined minutes. Williams had 3-5 with a steal and a block. And we're talking, I think, deep league stuff at the moment. Now, if Big Source goes for 24 minutes a night, then we know he's pretty much a double-double guy. But he can't run to 30 minutes. He couldn't do it last year. And he definitely won't do it coming off a knee injury this season. All right. Let's go player spotlight now, and we're going to head to Indiana. Now, I know I said that I didn't think I'd done a Bulls guy the other day, and it turned out I had. I don't think I've done a Pacers player yet for the player spotlight. Let me know if I have. Domantas Sabonis is the player we're going to look at here. He's currently dealing with an ankle issue at this point. He has been upgraded to he was doubtful for tomorrow. Now he's been upgraded to questionable. But let's talk about what he's done this season to really improve. He's playing an extra 5 minutes per game last year. I think a lot of people forget that he was a starter on that Thunder team until Taj Gibson arrived, because Billy Donovan refused to start Taj. But for the majority of last season, he was the starter in Oklahoma City, but averaged only 6 points and 3.5 rebounds. If we want to do a comparison, it's a good idea to look at the per 36 differences between what he's done this year and last year. The first thing that stands out is his usage has gone up almost 7%, which will happen when you're not on a team that has Russell Westbrook. So his per 36 numbers have gone from 10.6 points to 17. But I think more impressively, and more in line with what he did in college, is his rebounding has almost doubled. 6.3 last year, 11.5 this year. Now, he's never going to be a good shot blocker, averages less than one block per game per 36 minutes. But that real big increase in his rebounding, the marginal increase in his assist rate, which was well up at the start of the season and has really started to drop now, but it's that efficiency bump where his true shooting's gone from 54 to 57, so below to above league average, which is big, but that huge, huge rebound spike that we've seen from Sabonis has given him some value. In terms of what he is long term as a fantasy player, he can be your double-double type guy on good percentages. So a guy that perhaps if he got 30 minutes a night somewhere, he could average 15, he could average 10. I think he could do that. But the upside is significantly limited because he's not getting you one and a half steals like someone like Andre Drummond. He's not blocking you even a shot per game. And he's just nowhere near that. Short arms, doesn't show that rim protection, which really limits his upside. He's stretched out a little bit to three this year, only half attempt a game, but shooting 36% there is an encouraging sign after shooting under 30%, 32% last year. So an increase there, but it's the efficiency combination. 52 from the field, 74 from the line. While 74 is a little bit under for a big man, that's not a bad number, and he's taken that up from 66% last season. He has been impressive, but I would say that his value has dipped quite a bit at the end of this, towards the end of this year, but his advanced numbers have really taken a step forward. A huge true shooting percent increase of 10%, PER from 7 up to 17. Win shares from well below average to well above average, box score plus minus from negative 4.8 to negative 0.4. But weirdly, the team is actually worse with him on the court this season, negative 1.4, where last year was plus 3. But they're so close, it's not really a huge difference. In terms of, again, where I see him long-term for his fantasy value, I think that he can have, if he finds himself in a starter role, which is unlikely to happen with Miles Turner around, maybe it's on another team. I don't think he can play alongside Miles Turner. But if he was a 30-minute a game guy, I think he could have top 100 value. But I think pushing to top 75 is probably stretching it just a little bit. Again, he did have some really nice games at the start of the year in particular. He had six straight games of double-digit rebounding, 12-11-11, 12-16-12. And in three of those games, he had at least five assists, which really bringing that up. But those assist numbers recently have plateaued pretty significantly. Bring that back to the levels of last season, along with the lack of defense, the real restrictions in terms of his stretchability. I think that puts a significant cap of what he can do. I think you look at him as a worse Jonas Valanciunas, and I'm a big Valanciunas fan. I look at him that way, a big rebounder, a solid scoring guy, but just isn't as, not as big of an offensive guy as what Valanciunas is. But that's sort of the level I think he can get to, maybe that Valanciunas light level, but doesn't block as many shots, and that's going to keep him at this sort of level. Look, obviously a long way to go in his career, not yet 22, so still got a bit of time to go, but I just think a lot of the signs there, especially with that lack of defense, will hold him back from ever being an elite fantasy guy. Let's talk DFS. We're going to go perfect DFS lineup on FanDuel.
My name is Jeff.
Jeff Teague had 41.9 and Trey Burke had 62.2. Wigo had 34.4 and Wayno Seldon had 37.2. Joshie Jackson 36.2 and Mick Beasley had 38. Benny Simmons 41.1, Taji Gibson 39.6 and Mark Gasol had 55 for a total of 385.7. And that cost $59,200 on DraftKings. Lonzo had 46.5, Trey Burke 65.25, Simo had 42.75, Beasley had 39.5, Marc Gasol 54.5, Tyler Ulis 40.25, Al Horford 45.75, and Brooke Lopez 41.25 for a total of 375.75, and that cost $49,900. All right, 8-game slate on Tuesday. Normally, if it's an 8-game slate, it'll be all about getting involved. But again, we're in March. We're almost in April. Watch what you're doing for DFS because random shit happens. And not as much random shit happened in today's game, but there's a lot of ups and downs happening in this 8-game slate. The first one we're looking at is the Spurs and the Wizards. Of course, there's no Kawhi Leonard. There's also no Johnny Wall for probably the rest of this week as well. Very, very little that I like in this game from a DFS point of view. Mills at 4,300 as a point guard. DeJounte Murray at 59. Yeah, I could see Murray being a cash guy. I feel okay about him pushing to those high 20s, low 30s. I think there's some value, but there's some solidarity there, some consistency. Mills, I just have very little interest in at all. Tone Parker, Ramon Sessions, no. Thomas Satoransky's at 6,200. A really nice game from him last time out with 38. But against the Spurs, that's pretty strong fade territory. Ginobili, Dan Green, they're your shooting guards that I don't want anything to do with, but Brad Beal at 7,700 is interesting, but he has not been good. 26 average over the last three. The shots haven't been falling, and this defense with Green potentially switching, or most likely switching onto him, or Kyle Anderson, could be a real problem. So if I'm going to use Beal, it's only going to be for tournaments. For the small forwards, as for Kyle Anderson, just mentioned him, he's at 5,300. I have no appeal there. Otto Porter's at 7,200. He's giving you 30 almost every night. I don't mind Otto. That's 7,200. It's pretty high on an 8-game slate, but there is something there, but nothing spectacular. While Kelly Oubre at 52 is your GPP guy. At power forward, Markeith's at 58. I don't mind Markeith here. I think there is some value there for cash. He's going to get you around that 28 to 29, we would hope, in that sort of zone. But again, negative matchup against the Spurs. While Aldridge, who's been crushing it, he's at 9,300, averaging a whopping 57 points over his last five games. So while he is a tough one to keep out of the lineup, given how well he's playing, he doesn't have a great record against the Wizards. Granted, most of that's with Kawhi. I wouldn't be super strongly interested in putting him into a cash lineup. At center, Gortat at 41, you can fade the shit out of that. While Yan Mahinmi or Pau Gasol, Pau was excellent last game, dropped in 39 points. My faith in that happening again is fairly limited, but yeah, obviously he can still go out there, score highly, and get some block shots, which can give him that weirdo, 35, 40 point GPP upside, which has got a little bit of something. Not a lot, but a little bit. On DraftKings, there's more value, way more value on DraftKings in this game. Satoransky at 55, I'm strongly into. Otto Porter at 65, I think that's almost a cash. Well, not a lock, but it's pretty bloody good. Well, DeJounte Murray at 5,300 also looks a lot more appealing than what he does on FanDuel. I think all those guys are usable. Brad Beal at 74 and Aldridge at 92, very similar situations to how they look over on FanDuel as well. Let us go on to the next game now. We're talking Denver Nuggets on a back-to-back against the Toronto Raptors. The Raptors are favored by 9, and the total is 226 here. At point guard, Freddie Van Vliet is at $5,000. Great matchup for Fred. Minutes are the concern here, though, so I think you only want to use him in a tournament, despite the fact that he can very easily drop 30. He could also give you 15. DeLon Wright's at 46, or the Blue Arrow, Jamal Murray at 7,900. Now, Murray's been putting up some pretty strong numbers, averaging 38 over the last five, but I hate that price for him, and it's a real negative matchup with Kyle Lowry and Wright and Fred VanVleet all on him, so I think that's looking fadish to me. As for Lowry, positive matchup for him. He's at 8,300. The Nuggets should be fighting for their life and hopefully are able to keep it close enough for him to get those minutes, but I wouldn't be putting my full trust in it. Coming off a back-to-back, I'd be looking at that as more of a GPP guy. DeMar DeRozan at 8,000, struggled a bit recently. I think I'm ready to go back to the well here on DeRozan. Hopefully he has a good shooting night. The matchups are positive without Gaz Harris around. So I'm okay with DeRozan there. Well, Farton Will Barton at 7,100. He's cranking out the numbers, man. Averaging 37 over the last five. Fine. I don't like Barton as an aesthetically good player, or I don't think he's an overall good player, but for DFS at that price, we got to be interested. Small forwards, not a ton. Baby Neck Wilson Chandler's at 5,600. Just, I have real trouble putting him in. Again, a real negative matchup. The minutes have been up with Gaz out, so you could use that as a rationale to use him in a GPP, but I don't want anything to do with him in cash. And then we've got CJ Miles or the Jedi OG Anunoby.
Hello there.
I don't think we want either of those players. At power forward, Plumlee, Siakam, Serge Ibaka. Ibaka maybe for a tournament. Siakam at 4,900. That price, I think, takes away so much of the upward value on him that I don't want anything to do with it. While Paulie Millsap down at 6,800 because he has been struggling. We've talked about that. We've talked about it in this show already. 6,800 for Millsap. You can keep it. At center, Nick Jokic, 9,800 for the Joker. Averaging 51 over the last five. The last couple have been a little bit down, but I'm happy to go back to the well here with Jokic. While Jonas Valanciunas at $7,000. I think this could actually be a big one for Jonas, but that price is just, it's a little bit off-putting. If it was 6,500, I'd probably be in as a tournament guy. I still can look at it as a GPP, but you're having a level of faith in Valanciunas with the minutes the way that they have been recently, it's a tough thing to do. Jakob Poeltl is at 4,300. Some good games from him recently, but I just, low floor, low ceiling is not a DFS recipe for success. On DraftKings, there's a bunch that I like here. Siakam, Ibaka, Van Vliet, and Lowry. I think they're all really good tournament options. Whereas Millsap, Barton, Jamal Murray, DeRozan, and Jokic, they can all be used for cash and tournament. So this is a real stackable game over on DraftKings, way more so than over on FanDuel. You could even throw Baby Neck in a GPP there as well at 5,200, but a ton of guys that I like. I think the values and the prices of these guys really align with where their values should appear, hopefully. The Chicago Bulls and the Houston Rockets. The Rockets are going to be resting Jim Harden and Clint Capella. Ryan Anderson and Chris Paul will likely be back, while Luke Marmute is out. So this opens up the value. Chris Paul's at 8,400. It is a supremely positive matchup. He has crushed the majority of time with Harden out. He's not going to go full bore, but he's not going to have to go full bore in this matchup against Chicago. He could easily have 50 in 30 minutes. Love Chris Paul here, even coming off this hamstring, which, let's be honest, it was a rest, not really a hamstring. Cameron Payne at 5,500. No Chrissy Dunn. I know Zach LaVine, of course, while Lauri Markkanen is questionable. Payne at 5,500. I'm happy to use Payne here. It is a bit of a negative matchup against Paul, but I'm happy to go back with Cam here. He should be getting me 24 or 25 almost at a minimum, and that's a pretty good cash result. Jaren Grant, he played well last game. Jaren is at 4,900, but I didn't see the value there. At shooting guard, Eric Gordon, he is at 5,600. That is as smashable as it gets. That is the one that you want for cash that you cannot have a lineup without Eric Gordon at that sort of a price. Watch him come out and completely shit the bed, but I'm all about that there. And then an interesting one. Also, what the Bulls giving Sean Kilpatrick a 3-year contract. This guy's not good. I don't think he's good. I know he's blocked me on Twitter, so shout out to you for doing that, Sean. But I don't think he's good. I don't see what the purpose of him is on this team for 3 years. So many people coming after Sean, and he's gone to him, mate, I'm not going to sign unless you give me 3 years. And Garpax is going, oh shit, better go 3 years. Was everyone knocking down his door to give him a contract? Give him a 2-year with a partial guarantee on the second. Anyway. But no Zach LaVine, no Denzel the Hammer Valentine in this game. The sexy boy can fill it up, and I think they might play him in the Antonio Blakeney role, which is give him 25 to 27 minutes and just go shoot it as many times as you want. So at minimum salary for the sexy boy, very easily can get 30. Consider it. As much as I've just said, he's not that good. Justin Holiday at 38. Could they go and run him 28 minutes and let him take a just plethora of shots, even though he's an absolutely atrocious shooter this season? The opportunity is there without the hammer for him to go out there and put up some nice numbers. So he's an interesting guy also. Gerald Green at 3,700, an absolute smash fest there too. 38 points in his last game, no Harden, so he should be getting a fairly large role. Again, really tough to consider lineups without him and Gordon. They just give you so much flexibility in the other positions, and you're locking yourself down at almost 6-7x value at those two positions, probably, maybe even more. Joey Johnson's at minimum as well. I would, with those absences, I would definitely consider him a GPP guy who could give you 26 or 27. In fact, Joe Johnson's had a 34-point game this year, as bananas as that sounds. Trevor Ariza's at 53. He's done very well against the Bulls in the past, but it's not the same Trevor Ariza. He's struggled to get himself over 20 recently. Really hard to consider him anything more than a flyer. At power forward, there's no Capella, so Tariq Black, I think, will start. He's a minimum salary guy, and he has also had a 32-point game this season, so that is an excellent GPP matchup in a really, really positive spot for him, especially if they announce that he's starting over Nene. We could also see Chinana Onwuaku, we could see Joe Chi in this one, but Black is the guy here, I think, who can get you a 24 or 25 and bring some value into that minimum salary slot. Punchbob Shipbloke is at 6,700. Not really getting anywhere near that of recent times. Really struggling a bit, so I'm not super keen there. Same with Anderson and Lauri Markkanen at 5,800. I think the biggest impact Markkanen will have is if he sits, allowing you to use Noah Vonleh at 4,400, who is a low upside, safe-ish floor player if Markkanen's gone. At center, Chris Felizio is at 45 again. His lowest score over the last five games is 24 points. So I'm all about considering that as a cash play there. Just lock yourself in, get 25, build around it. You open yourself up to value in so many other spots there if those guys are in your lineup. I think there is a lot of value coming up, but remember, tanktastic times mean be careful with your outlays. Nene at minimum salary, they're not going to be extending Nene huge amounts. So I wouldn't be getting overly excited despite the fact that Capella is sitting. On to DraftKings. Ariza at 48, Sexy Boy at minimum salary 3,000. There's upside there. Joey Johnson at 38, Justin Holiday and Tariq Black, all some really good tournament options. In fact, if they say Black is starting at 3,000 bucks, that is almost a no-brainer cash situation for him. For cash and tournaments, you love Chrissy Paul. Punch Bob is in a better spot at 6,200. I can use that. Gerald Green, not quite as good as FanDuel, but still valuable. And Chris Felizio. Well, Eric Gordon, I've got to highlight him because he's at 7,200 on DraftKings, which is just an exorbitantly high price. And that takes away a ton of his value. If everyone starts flocking to him on DraftKings, that would be, I'd say, you know what? I'll let you guys have that because I think that that's really not the value play that it is over on FanDuel. Let's go to the next one. We're talking Trailblazers and Pelicans. The Pelicans are favored by 1.5. The total is 222. Thank you, Richie.
2 for 222.
Where are we in this one? No injuries to... Oh, actually, not true. The Pelicans, Nikola Mirotic and Rajon Rondo are both questionable for this game. Of course, if Mirotic is out, we're looking at Cheick Diallo pretty bloody closely. You're looking at Darius Miller as a GPP guy. If Rondo's out, then Etwan Moore solidifies somewhat and Ian Clark becomes a tournament player that you can take a squeeze at as well. Over on FanDuel here for point guards, Lillard's at $9,000. He's been putting up fairly consistent numbers. There is upside there. He's a totally fine guy to use. Well, Rondo at 5,700. Rondo is cranking. He's averaging 40 over his last three. If he plays at a $900 price dip, I'd be happy to use him. But remember, point guards have struggled against Portland all season, so bear that in mind. But I could consider Rondo, if he's ready to go, an option here. Shabazz Napier at minimum salary, not really getting anything happening. Well, Clarko at 4,100. Ian Clark is a guy that in his time for Golden State basically never missed a shot against Portland. Hasn't really carried over to New Orleans, but that's something to just bear in mind, that if Rondo's out, he would be an interesting tournament sort of player. Drew is down to $8,000 now because the numbers haven't been where they were before. A little bit of a negative matchup, so tournaments only. Well, CJ McCollum's crushing it, actually averaging more than what Holiday has been. He is averaging 35 over the last five, but I still don't think that it's an excellent play there. At small forward, we're looking at Mo Harkless, who apparently is the greatest shooter of all time. Shout out to Trey Burke. He's at 4,700 there, Mo. I know he's dropped 41 in the last game. I just don't see it happening again. He had like 4 assists and 4 blocks and 17 points. Just stuff that just doesn't seem realistic. Etuan Moore at 48. Rondo's out. Happy with it. Otherwise, no. Evan Turner, Darius Miller, Solomon Hill, very little interest. At power forward, of course, it's Tone Davis. 12,500 for Tone. Really hard guy to leave out of your tournament pool. And, you know, a pretty solid cash guy that you're going to get 55 to 60 almost guaranteed each night. Mirotić, Davis, no. The Chief.
Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe shit.
Al-Farouq Aminu's at 6,500. The value proposition of that price is just not interesting to me at all. While Cheick Diallo, 4,300. No Nick Mirotić. Bang this in. He's averaging 22 over the last 3 in 21 minutes. I'd be at 4,300. I would be really, really interested in that in cash if Nick Mirotić is out with that hip flexor injury, which I think that he might have a chance of missing. Didn't talk Yusuf Nurkic. I'm not super interested in him just because of the Davis factor. On DraftKings, really into Tone Davis here. 11,300. That is a ton of value. Lillard, probably not quite as good as what he is on FanDuel. And very few options that look as exciting as what they do on FanDuel for this one. Or Diallo, again, at 4,000 would be excellent if Mirotić sat this one out. The next game we're going to take a look at, we are looking at the Cleveland Cavaliers. We're going Miami Heat. For the Cavs, Kyle Korver is listed as doubtful. Jeff Green,
my name is Jeff,
is doubtful as well, while Hassan Whiteside is also doubtful. So it's a little bit more of the same from both of these teams from what we've seen recently. At point guard, the iron shoulder, Goran Dragic. Point guards have killed the Cavs, so Dragic is in a positive spot here and happy to go to that well here. Really, really interested in using him. While Georgie Hill at 4,900, with the absences of Korver and Green, that does give him some more minutes as Jordy Clarkson pushes to the 2 more. He's at 4,900, and amazingly, he's averaging over 30 points in the last 3 games. I still don't have full confidence in George Hill. I feel like he can go missing at any time, but there is some tournament value there in looking at him. Tyler Johnson, a little bit the same, not really super keen though. Jordy Clarkson's at 4,500. I am interested in him as a tournament guy, but zero interest in cash at all. While Dwayne Wade was really good last time, someone asked me today, oh, you want to look at Wade here against his former team? You know, I put zero into that factor, unless it's Jay Triano trying to, you know, really go the old, mate, good coach, aren't I? Yeah, good coach. These guys play against your old team, mate. I'm a good coach. Go tell the owner. He listens to the players go tell the GM, because that's how he hires these coaches. A player just has to go say, mate, good coach, and then he hires them. So, mate, I'll let you play good against your old team. That's not the case with Eric Spoelstra. So I'm not really super interested in Wade. The only thing I look at is it. Their defensive backcourt shithouse. So Wade could have a decent night there, but he's not really thinking there's great value. Rocket Rodney Hood's at 4,700 again. Yeah, probably not. The Duke, the plumber, no. At small forward, Joshy Richardson, 5,800. Don't really like Richo here. It is an okay matchup for him, despite having to face off against LeBron James. The Cavs have given up numbers to small forwards all season. Richardson's numbers are a little bit down, and I don't really see massive, massive tournament upside at that price. Justice Winslow, no. LeBron is at 12,300. We know he's been putting up some really good numbers. I'd be okay with it. I'd probably feel better about using Anthony Davis at 12,500 rather than LeBron at 12,300.
LeBron James!
But he's in play, as always. Jim Johnson's at 58, boosts in value with Hassan Whiteside out. Happy to use him as a tournament. Or Kevin Love is crushing at 8,100. Love, yeah. I think, yeah, for cash, it's totally fine to use him at that sort of a salary. Kelly Olynyk at 7,000. That's big. That's a big salary, but he's giving that number back almost every game. So I'm okay with doing that. We get to reignite the old Kevin Love, Kelly Olynyk rivalry. So see how that goes down. But I think that Kelly is a worthy guy to look at here with Whiteside sidelined once again. Laz Nance, foul trouble last game, yielded 6 points. But with Love back, with Thompson back, I think his upside is fairly significantly limited. And at 5,600, you can do better. Bam Adebayo and Tristan Thompson, I don't really see much with those two guys as your center position players. On DraftKings, Love and Olynyk again, I think there's value, 78 and 6,700 for those guys respectively. Well, LeBron at 11,600 is in a much better spot, much like Davis is, and he is clearly a cash and a tournament player. The iron shoulder, a little bit less appealing, and Jordy Clarkson at 46 has a little bit of a tournament value, very similar to how it looks over on FanDuel. Let's go to the next game. It's the Dallas Mavericks. It's the Sacramento Kings. Zach Randolph is questionable, as is Garrett Temple, whereas for Dallas, Dirk is listed as probable, but we've got a bunch of question marks here. It's a back-to-back for Dallas. We also don't know what's going to happen with the Salah, Mejri, Nerlens Noel rotation. The talk is they were going to rotate those guys. That's happened the last two games. Mejri played one, Noel played the last one. But we've also got Dwight Powell in the mix here as questionable. If Powell has to miss, do both Mejri and Noel play in that situation? I would have to think yes. The other thing is Dorian Finney-Smith, who has been sitting out one game of a back-to-back, he's been the starting shooting guard. Does he sit this game? There are a lot of question marks in this game in general, so using players in cash is going to be a little bit of a harder scenario. But in saying that, Dennis Smith Jr. has a very positive matchup. He's at 7,700. He's averaging 34 over the last three since returning from his ankle. Great matchup. 30-point floor, yeah, 35-point floor, maybe. I feel pretty good about Smith here, but again, there's so much uncertainty, probably more tournaments. Well, Yogi Ferrell at 55, if we have Finney-Smith out, I think Ferrell at 55 becomes a strong, strong play. Also, JJ Barea is out for the next two as well. De'Aaron Fox is at 5,700, just really doing very little, averaging 16 points over the last five, had nine last game, struggling. It's a good matchup against Smitty. Averaging 29 against the Mavericks when he's played them this season. So I think he's worth a GPP look, but his form recently has not been good. He's been outplayed by Frankie Mason III. At shooting guard, Bogdan's at 4,800. I'm going to have to pass on that one. He has really, really tailed off at the end of the season, while Budrick Hield is coming on strong. A $7,000 price tag for Budrick, I think that's probably pushing it a little bit too much, but I don't hate it if you want to use it in cash. I feel like he's got a level of safety in his floor, but there's also some dickish stuff that Jaeger can do and unexplain things where he'll play him 17 or 18 minutes. Small forwards, the pencil, 6,400 for Harrison Barnes. Just not interested at all. Finney Smith, Justin Jackson, Dougie McDirt, no value in either of or any of those guys. At power forward, Labissiere at 53. If Zach Randolph is out, I'm all about Labissiere at 53. If not, very, very hard to use him. Or Randolph at 48, that's strong fade territory. And Dirk at 48, no thanks, mate. Dwighty Powell, no. At center, Mejri is at 4,500. If he is the guy that actually plays here, it's a great, great matchup against the Kings. He's one of these blokes that can go out there and block four or five shots, and that has significant GPP upside, but that's the only way you'd want to use him. While Kufos and Cauley Stein, a couple of other Kings centers there, 6,900 for Cauley Stein.
Giggity!
Has been doing jack shit recently, but there is some value there, some upside value, but that's probably best left to others. On DraftKings, Smitty at 6,700. Dennis Smith Jr., I love that. That's really, really good pricing. And Cauley Stein at 5,600. That's super hard to ignore. Yeah, again, he struggled, but at that price, I feel pretty good about his ability to get at least high 20s, and that's going to give you some value there. Mejri at 3,100 also looks very, very good as a tournament play, but you can't trust him in cash because you just don't know what they're going to do. And, yeah, similar things with Fox and Ferrell. Hield at 6,100 has a higher level of appeal on DraftKings too. Let's go on to the next game. We've got the Indiana Pacers. We've got the Golden State Warriors. Talked already about Domantas Sabonis in this one, who's been upgraded to questionable. For the Warriors, we've got Kevin Durant is out. Klay is out. Steph is out. Omri Caspi is doubtful. While Draymond has been upgraded to probable. So that's good news, obviously, for Draymond Green. At point guard, Daz Collison's at 5,800. Him and Corey Joseph, I think we can do better. While Quinn Cook is now up to 6,000, and for good reason. He is minimum score over the last five games is 30 points. Yes, the Pacers have been pretty good defensively against point guards, but Cook is just doing what he wants the majority of this time. He's going to get big minutes, $6,000. I'm okay with using with Quinny Cook. Shooting guards, Uncle P, Nick Young, 4,800. Hasn't done a huge amount lately. Really more of a tournament guy than anything. Boyan's at 4,800. Of course, only tournaments for him. While Stevenson and Iguodala, I think there are better plays around. Draymond's at 8,500. Coming off a flu. or coming off the flu, sorry, not a flu, coming off the flu at 8,500 for Draymond. I'd only want to use it in tournaments. While Kevon Looney, who's been crushing, he's at 4,800 Looney. I think Draymond's return puts a little bit of a dampener on what Looney can do, but he has been really, really impressive. Jordy Bell at 4,500, also very little interest. Thaddeus Young at 6,100. If Sabonis is out, I think Thad at 6,100 is worth looking at. He dropped 56 last game on the back of a ton of defensive numbers, but if Sabonis is out, I'm interested there. Trevor Booker and Sabonis, not interested in those players. At center, Miles Turner has done well against the Warriors. Centers against the Warriors, normally a struggle, but Turner can do it. If you're going to use him, save yourself the hassle and only do it in a tournament, and even then, probably not. Zaza and JaVale, yeah, I don't really think we need to go too into them. On DraftKings, let's have a look. McCaw at minimum salary, maybe, for Pat McCaw with Durant out, but tournaments only, really. Very little else that stands out as sensational. All the same sort of stuff. You know, Thad and Nick, the two youngs, some GPP value. Draymond, perhaps. I didn't even talk Oladipo. I think he's probably a little bit too highly priced on FanDuel. For DraftKings at 8,300. Again, probably more tournament. I'm not super feeling him at that over $8,000 price numbers. His numbers have been down quite a bit recently. Let's go on to the last game of the night. It's the Milwaukee Bucks. They're taking on the LA Clippers. Danilo the Rooster Gallinari is he is doubtful, while Ty Wallace, the G League season is over, so he should be back with the main team. So should CJ Williams, so you could see those guys back in the rotation. At point guard, we're looking at Austin Rivers at 5,800. Like it, cash, tournaments, really in. Milos Teodosic at 4,000. With Wallace potentially rejoining the rotation, I think it's a little bit hard to use Milos, not really putting up the numbers we want. Well, Eric Bledsoe at 7,500. This is a really good defensive team against point guards. The matchup with Rivers there and Chuck Wallace on there at times, that can be an issue. Bledsoe's at 75. I think he's maybe a sliver below that, so that's probably leave that alone. Sindarius Thornwell, Brandon Jennings, no. Shooting guard, Jace Terry, will he start again? I don't give a shit because he's not doing anything in those minutes. I think you can leave him alone. Lou Williams at 75, I'm all about it. 45 average over the last three. A really strong chance he goes for another 36 or 37 here, which would bring home that value. Well, Chrissy Middleton's at 8,000. Give me Lou every day of the week. As for Ty Wallace at 4,500, I just don't know. Before he ran out of days, he was averaging 28 points, which is excellent at that salary, but I don't know how they're going to utilize him. If we hear that he's starting, then yeah, I'd throw him into a tournament. Tone Snell? Cool, no. Yanni, 11,200 for Giannis Antetokounmpo, has been a little bit down the last couple, but realistically, that's still a strong play at 11,200, especially if you don't want to break the $12,000 mark and take a Tone Davis or a LeBron James. Wes Johnson at 36? Yeah, no. Nah. Shabazz Muhammad, nah. Power forward, Toby Harris, 7,300. No Rooster, so I'm in on Toby here. I think there is some real value there for cash and for tournaments. While the Muppet, John Henson at 53, amazingly, he is averaging 29 points over the last three games, playing quite well, getting those blocks, and it is a positive matchup here for the Muppet. So I think that you could sneak him into cash. Now, there are some other center guys out there you might want to throw in, your Tariq Black, who we mentioned earlier, but the Muppet's not a bad play here. The table, Montrezl Harrell at 5,000, I think that's probably just pushing it a little bit too high. At center, DeAndre at 8,000. Real good chance to crush the Bucks here on the boards. I like him. I think you can use him for cash. Really good tournament sort of player as well. While Thon McCurr, Boban Marjanovic, and Tyler Zeller, I feel like they're pretty big stay away guys. On DraftKings, Ty Wallace again, minimum salary. That's super, super interesting if he plays. While Yanni and Austin Rivers are some pretty strong cash and tournament guys over on DraftKings. All right, let's just run through the last couple of sites. On Yahoo for tournaments, Tone Davis, Eric Gordon, Dan Green, Kevon Looney, Salah Mejri, Joe Johnson, Tariq Black, Corey Joseph. And for cash and tournaments, we're looking at Teodosic, Etuan Moore, Georgie Hill, Felicio, Siakam, The Muppet, Uncle P, Jordy Clarkson, Yogi Ferrell, Van Vliet, Gerald Green, DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Love, and Chris Paul. For Moneyball tournaments, Davis, Yanni, Chris Paul, Jokic, Blue Arrow, Toby Harris, CJ McCollum, Cauley Stein, Jim Johnson, Van Vliet, Ibaka, Bogdan, Salah Mejri, Shawnee, Sexy Boy Kilpatrick, Joe Johnson, Tariq Black, and for cash, we've got Chris Felizio, we've got Campaign, Gerald Green, Dragic, Nurkic, Olynyk, Eric Gordon, Farton Will Barton, Lou Williams, Dennis Smith, DeRozan, Love, and Lillard, and on Draft Stars to finish it off, Jokic for tournaments, Jamal the Blue Arrow Murray, Jim Johnson, Gerald Green, Cauley Stein, Markeith, Jordy Clarkson, Dan Green, Scalabissier, Salah Mejri, the Sexy Boy, Pat McCaw, and for tournaments we've got Tariq Black, we've got Chris Felizio, Uncle P, DeJounte, Yogi, Quinny Cook, Khalil Linick, Eric Gordon, Dennis Smith, DeMar DeRozan, DeAndre Jordan, Chris Paul, and Yanni Adedokunpo. All right, guys, make sure you are checking out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network. Go check out Locked On Bulls to hear their thoughts on the Sexy Boys signing and, of course, Locked On NBA. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On NBA Net and on Facebook and the new LockedOnSports.com. My name's Josh Lloyd. If you've forgotten by from the start of the episode, I'm the lead fantasy analyst at Basketball Monster. Reminder, we will be doing DFS all through the playoffs on Basketball Monster. Go follow me on Twitter at RedRock_Beeble. If you listen to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, go leave a 5-star rating and a review. And you can also find us on Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, and on YouTube. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.
My name is Jeff.
Teague.